Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellefson with the Digital Education Podcast. Just an opportunity for me to have conversations with people in education who are doing interesting things, innovative things, leadership-wise, school-wise, but then even just the big picture of education. And today I'm with Serdar Ferit, who is the co-CEO and creative director of Lifta. Lifta is a subscription-based digital platform where teachers and students can access immersive story worlds and curriculum-based lesson and assembly plans. But the description doesn't do it well. So I'm gonna ask Serdar the first question kind of here is, you've won a number of awards. You've kind of been recognized now in innovation, and you've gotten to this place where, you know, I had the opportunity to see your work in London when I was there, you know, just a little over a month ago. What is Lifta? I mean, I know that description kind of gives a little bit, the website's incredible, but what is Lifta? And then how did you come from being a teacher and a documentarian to this world of education and this side of things?
Thank you, Eric. Thank you for inviting me to the program. It was a pleasure to meet you in London. At the Church of England School Leaders Conference. The question was, what is Lifta and how did I come to where I am and where we are now, correct? So first of all, Lifta as a word is actually Lufta. It's a Nordic word, Swedish and other Nordic languages, and it means to lift. And the reason we called Lifta was because that we wanted to help to lift traditional lessons into powerful, immersive educational experiences. So that's where the word comes from. And in terms of what it is, well, it's a window into the lives of people. And those people can be anywhere in the world. And through that window, we can go into a person's home or workplace. We can look around that space in 360 degrees on a computer or a tablet, so using our mouse or our finger. And there are a number of things that we can click on. And when we click on something, if it looks clickable, it's usually clickable, and it fires up some multimedia. So that could be a rich media article, it could be some sound, it could be some photos, it could be a piece of text to read. And in each space, there's always at least one human being. And when we click on the human being, they come to life in a short documentary film. And these are very short films. They're sort of 3 to 7, 8 minutes long. And they are about that person. And the themes that we see through the films and through the other multimedia are then woven into a curriculum and delivered through lessons and assemblies. So that is kind of the Lifta experience.
I'm interested in kind of like part of that being your personal experience, right? You know, as someone who is a storyteller, someone who, you know, has been in education and a teacher, how did you find yourself in a place where it was, you know, I've done a documentary, I've done some work, and I want to share this with the broader audience? And how did it, you know, connect in with, you know, the mission and vision to connect, you know, the broader world and connect students with other parts of the world?
So I met my partner, my wife, Paulina, on our master's degree in documentary filmmaking. And we met in 2003, and we completed our master's degree, and Paulina went to Ethiopia. I don't know how she managed to save up enough money to go traveling straight after this very expensive education that we bought ourselves. I had just saved up enough money to drive her to the airport, but she had somehow saved up enough money to go to Ethiopia. And she went away for a month, and you know, her auntie was actually working there at the time, so she had a free place to stay, so I guess that was helpful. And she came back, and I had saved up just enough money to pick her up from the airport on her way back. And the first thing she told me about was this place called Aura Amba in northern Ethiopia. Now, it was a community that she'd come across, and when you come across an interesting story as a recent graduate of documentary filmmaking, you think that you ought to make a film about that story or that place. And it was the first thing she told me in the car is, I went to this place and we have to make a documentary about it. We have to share this story. And she was so inspired because the story of Aura Amba was the opposite of anything we'd ever really seen about Ethiopia in our mainstream media. Here was a place that was founded by 19 farmers and shepherds who couldn't read or write, that had evolved into a thriving community of over 500 people that had completely pulled itself out of poverty, and today is a place that's held up as a model society, not only in Ethiopia but in other countries too. And a place that now has around 20% university graduates, having started from a place of zero literacy. So it's a phenomenally successful place, very humble group of people that started it. And we were just fascinated by their story. So in 2004, we started our relationship with this community. And over time, and our initial instinct was, let's make a documentary and share this story with, you know, with people back home. And we kept going back, and we developed a really, really strong relationship with the community. But as we kept going back and as time went by, I started to teach as well. We started to realize that actually we don't just want to make a documentary about this place. We want to take people there. We want people to experience this in a similar way to the way we've experienced it, because only then can they really understand, as we have, how powerful this story is. So we then started to think about, well, how can we make this a more experiential and more immersive experience? So back in 2009, we started to research, you know, immersive storytelling, 360 photography, interactivity in film, immersive sound. And we retrained, we learned how to take 360 photographs. We were trained by a brilliant panoramic photographer from Germany. And we decided we're gonna make our first immersive interactive documentary. And the decision to kind of go on that path came in around 2009. And it took us until the end of 2013 to complete our first version of it. And when we did that, it was very well received. So our audience was the documentary world. So we were invited to various international film festivals to show this experience, to literally VJ it. So be there and guide people on a mouse and a computer, you know, full auditorium, talk about each new scene, introduce the various people that we were meeting. And we had this in a number of countries with completely packed audiences and auditoriums. We were invited to various universities. So Cambridge, the University of Cambridge in the UK, London School of Economics, the University of the Arts in the UK, these all invited us to show, you know, as I said, packed auditoriums, sort of people who are interested in this way of storytelling, as well as the story itself. The Guardian newspaper featured some of it. The Nobel Peace Center invited us for a couple of meetings. And we were quite excited and quite comfortable with this audience of sort of educated adults, basically, documentary loving people. And my dad, who's a retired primary school teacher, took a look at what we'd made, and he said, "This is really good. Have you ever shown this to kids?" And they were like, "Well, yeah, some teenagers were in the audience at a film festival in Norway, and they liked it." And he said, "No, have you shown this to seven-year-olds? I think seven-year-olds would really like this." And we were like, "What are you talking about? This is the Guardian readers. Like, this is not for seven-year-olds." And he said, "No, I have a real hunch that children will like this. And you should, I would recommend that you try it. What have you got to lose?" And I'd been a teacher at that point for almost a decade, actually, when he said that. A part-time teacher, so I should add, I was a part-time filmmaker, part-time teacher to make ends meet. Often as a filmmaker, as a freelance filmmaker, you do anything you can so that you can continue making films. So I did teaching, and I loved teaching, but I always taught sort of post-16, so post-16-year-olds. So 16 to 24-year-olds, I started off in sort of what we call colleges in the UK, but what would be high school in the US. And then I moved on to teaching at universities. Anyway, so I'd never taught like primary age or elementary age children. But we thought, okay, well, let's try. And actually my dad said, "Why don't you meet them my former boss, Graham Smith, what an English name. And I'd met Graham before, and I was like, are you sure? Like, because Graham was this stern guy. He'd graduated from Oxford in history years ago. I thought, Graham is probably one of the least excitable people I've met. I'm actually nervous about showing this to Graham. He said, no, show Graham. Graham will have an idea about what you can do with this. So I went and had a meeting with Graham, and I showed him what we'd made. And he got really excited. He said, this is really, really exciting. This is really good. And he emailed like about 20 people and said, you need to see this. And a couple of them got back in touch with me. And one of them was a woman called Lisa Tanner. And Lisa Tanner was working at, I'm sorry, this is a long story. Lisa Tanner was at the time working at Pearson, which is one of the big publishers, I'm sure you know. And she was a consultant for Pearson in global learning. And she looked at what we'd made and she said, this is the best global learning resource I've ever seen in my life. Those were her exact words. And we were like, okay, well, for us, it's an interactive documentary, but I'm really glad to hear that you think this is a good global learning resource. And with her help, we managed to get arrange a test in a classroom. And it was at a school in Ipswich, in Suffolk, in the United Kingdom, and it was with 7 and 8 year olds. And they had a teacher called Michelle, who was a great global learning enthusiast.
Michelle?
Yeah, Michelle, that's my son. He's in the room with me. And Michelle was very kind. She gave us a double session, so two 45-minute sessions, and the children had a 15-minute break in the middle. And we started the lesson. We had a structure and some questions. And a quest really for the children to do. And they went in and none of them wanted to go on the break. They were so immersed and engaged. So nobody went on the break, they carried on. And at the end of the day, we had 10 questions that we had designed to see how much they could, what they could process, what they could remember, what they could understand, what they could articulate. And we asked these questions and they included trick questions. And they answered them so well, so articulately, so sensitively, so intelligently, that we were literally, there were three of us, we were just open-mouthed, like, wow. And I looked over at Michelle to see what her response was, and she was crying in front of all of her children, because she was so moved and inspired by what they'd done. And it was their first experience, really, with something so exotic, for want of a better word, in Ipswich, in this school. And that was the day when we thought, you know what, this is the most exciting audience we've ever had. You know, with all due respect to the Guardian Reading documentary audiences that we'd met, this was by far the most exciting audience. And that's when we decided, actually, that we will dedicate everything we have to this.
So, Serdar, tell me a little bit more. You started with the Ethiopia story, and then you've expanded to over 30 stories now. You know, how are you expanding those stories, or how are you using those stories now as you 5 years later from that original story of kind of deciding to be, you know, and to use this with schools and then use this in education? You know, how have you grown and seen the capacity to grow? And then how are you seeing, maybe the question that goes with the growth in the stories is schools use LIFTA to really engage their students in that global conversation and in global learning?
Mm-hmm. So schools use it in a real number of ways, and that was so exciting for us to see. So initially what we did is we made teacher guides for every story with a number of different lessons in them. And then one thing that we always did also is we offered webinars and workshops to show people how to use LIFTA, because at the end of the day, we want them to change. Well, we want them to adopt a new behavior. And that's not the easiest thing to do with busy people like teachers. So we had 1 hour webinars and we'd show them how to use LIFTA. And in that webinar, we'd always ask, after each story, like, what can we learn from this and what can we teach with it? How could you use this in your classroom or in your school? And they would come up with so many amazing ideas. You know, we had our own educational material then, and we, you know, I still love what we produced, but they came up with so many different ways of using it, and we started to share that with other teachers. And now what we've done is we've evolved that process so that it's not just a single webinar at the beginning. It's a webinar to get started with. Then we give them a 4-week period to do some practice, try it in a lesson or an assembly or more, and then come back to a review session. And in that review session, there would be a number of different educators, and they would all share with each other what they've done and how it worked. And that's a really, really nice model. So to answer your question, initially what we did is we thought, okay, we looked at the primary curriculum and we said, should we focus it on primary schools? We were about to do that, but then we had interest from secondary schools and high schools. And we already knew that university students had engaged with it before we even started LIFTA, so we thought, well, why would we limit ourselves? We based everything on the Finnish curriculum, right? And the Finnish curriculum proposes cross-curricular learning. So all of our lesson plans are cross-curricular. They are sort of focused on literacy, geography, what we call PSHE, personal, social, and health education, citizenship, in some cases art, more and more now with the new content, science. So we try and offer cross-curricular learning. And then we provide what our own lesson and assembly plans for teachers, but insist and encourage them to use their own professional creativity and practice to weave this into their own curriculums. And we've seen that happen in so many different ways. So I say assemblies. Do you have assemblies in America?
We do.
Yeah. So that was fed to us. So we initially started with lesson plans, but then we heard about head teachers introducing LIFTA not only to the children, but also to the staff through assemblies. So a head teacher would go into a story world in an assembly, look around it, click on a few things, read them out, and then play a documentary. And then all of the children would be curious and the teachers would be curious, and that was their way of sort of selling it into the school. So we thought, okay, brilliant. So they've got assemblies. We did a focus group with head teachers. They said what came out of that is that we should make also assembly plans, postcard-sized assembly plans for really busy head teachers who want to quickly talk about a particular theme or subject or sustainable development goal with the content that we have. So we made a pack of assembly plans for every single piece of content that we have as well. What we've done over the last couple of years is we've built something called LIFTA 2.0, which is superior in a number of ways. And one of the ways is that the lesson plans in there are copyable, duplicatable, and editable. So where the old lesson plans were PDF-based, these ones are now built within LIFTA's lesson builder. You can either create your own lesson from scratch, or you can edit one of ours, amend one of ours as you wish, which is often what teachers were doing. So again, we've learned by having really close contact with lots and lots of teachers, how they've been using LIFTA and adapted it for them, basically, so that it better suits their needs.
So let me ask two last questions. And go for it. You know, and I really appreciate your time and being able to share your story and how you've developed this. I'm wondering, and you know, we've been kind of on quarantine for 8 days here in California now, and you've just started. Like, as we kind of, our world shrink a little bit, and maybe in some ways for good reason, you know, and it'll be good for us, but then, you know, it's necessary, but how can, like, whether it's teachers or parents even, you know, at a time like this, like, how can they find out more about LIFTA? But how might they be able to use this to, you know, kind of take the worlds that are going to shrink on them pretty fast here to expand and to connect to the broader story of the work that you're doing and the work that you've done, you know, by bringing these stories to your platform?
What we've done for, so we are not a huge company, right? So we are, we're a growing company, and we've been very careful about how we expand. We're very fortunate in that we're quite grounded as founders, and also we've we've been very careful about our investors, and you know, they all have a long-term perspective. And we've really focused on the UK and Finland in terms of schools and nurturing the relationships and building on our relationships with the schools in these two countries. We have had a lot of interest from different countries, so from the US, from countries in the Middle East, from countries in Asia, and other European countries. But so far, we haven't really, we haven't launched in these countries properly. And the reason for that is because we know that we can deliver a really good service in Finland and the UK at the moment, and that's what we're doing. So what we've done now in Finland and the UK is tell all of our current schools that we work with that any child from those schools can access Lifter at home. And we're working on how we can support the parents with that, because all of a sudden, it's not just one teacher per classroom, it's potentially, you know, 30 sets of parents who will be using Lifter at home. So we're working on how we can support those parents. In terms of supporting other parents around the world, this is still a question mark for us. And I'm just being honest with you. We plan to be in the United States from September 2021 properly. We have got good partnerships in the US. So we work with the University of North Carolina. They use Lifter on the teacher training course for several years, actually. They've used it for several years. Professor Elizabeth Crawford, who's great, and you know, we're a big fan of hers, and she's a big fan of ours. And it started to seep into sort of schools in North Carolina just on a pilot basis, and we've had some really good feedback. We also work with Professor John Kim from Harvard. We've been very fortunate that he's taken an interest in us, and Professor Kim is our US advisor, and with his help, know-how, and support, we will be trying to make a proper entry in the US on solid foundations. So that's what I have to say on that matter at the moment. What we can do now for parents and children, we will make at least one story available, probably as a video and some lesson content. And when we do, I can let you know, and you can promote that as you wish. But that's all I can sort of promise for the time being. And I wish I could do more. But yeah, I'm usually sort of reined in by the rest of our team.
That's incredible. And I know I put you on the spot a little bit there. And I think it's some of it. It's just the free flow of, you know, we're just, I think probably just like I am with my work and you are, it's just like, okay, what are we figuring out and what are we discovering? And, you know, and all these plans that we think we have, you know, how does that change? And maybe that's the last question I was going to ask you, because part of your story was, you know, is this kind of interesting. It seems like there were a few or a couple surprises along the way, and your company and you and your partner have been recognized, you know, for your innovations, for your innovation in this space and in education, the Reimagine Awards and, you know, some of those. But it seems like, you know, like a lot of people talk about how innovation might be planned, and especially at a time like this, what would be your encouragement to just, you know, allow, you know, what we do and how we proceed to maybe surprise us?
We've had a lot of surprises over the last 5 years. And the first one was in that school in Ipswich. Well, actually, my dad initially saying, you should show this to children, even though we were thinking about it from an educational perspective, that going and then Graham being excited by it and Lisa being excited by it and then taking it to schools, was, they were all surprises. The two big surprises we've had since Lifter has been in a number of schools. One came, and I'm going to open a can of worms with this, because this is something that we don't actively offer at the moment. So we are experts in immersive storytelling, right? So we've been making 360 content for over a decade. We've both taught at a couple of universities. I taught a whole module on immersive storytelling, on 360 storytelling, to many, many young people in Finland, and was one of the first lecturers in Finland to do that. So everything that we've made for Lifter is also available in our beta virtual reality app, and we've had that for a number of years. And when I was invited to a school in North London in 2017, and we did a workshop which included virtual reality. So it was the platform that you saw, but also the virtual reality part of it. And I did a little workshop with just a small group of children, 12, 13-year-olds, and they went into Aramba, the Ethiopian village I mentioned earlier, and the task was to go in and tell everybody what you can see and what you can hear, and if there's any content that's readable, read that out and share it with them. So we did that, and then this boy put the VR headset on. He went into the weaving workshop in Aramba, clicked on this content, and some text popped up. And I asked him to read it, and he hesitated for a moment, and then he read it perfectly, really, really well. And he took the headset off, and it was the next person's turn. And as he gave me the headset, he said, "By the way, I'm severely dyslexic, and I haven't read out loud in my life." Those were his exact words. But I just did, and I thought you should know that. And obviously, I didn't know him, so I would never have put him on the spot like that had I known that he had dyslexia, never mind severe dyslexia. So that was a massive surprise. And then we couldn't ignore that. That was significant. So we asked if he'd be okay to be interviewed. So we interviewed the boy. We talked to his teacher. His mum emailed me the next day, like, "What is happening? I want to meet you. I want to see this." So we interviewed his mother, and we realized that this was really exciting and interesting. So we started to work with two universities in Finland, and we did another test with 21 children from England and Wales who had reading disabilities. The other huge surprise, which is really encouraging and still sort of ongoing in schools, is our top user in 2018. And maybe ever still, was a teacher called Helena Morrissey. And Helena, I was going to a conference in Manchester, and I just looked at the schools that were good users in Manchester, around the Manchester area, and I noticed Helena's name, and she'd used Lifter quite a few times. So I asked her if she'd like to come in and have a chat at the conference place that I was going to be at. And she came in, and shame on me, I didn't do enough homework on Helena and her school. And Helena was from a special education school, and she only teaches autistic children. And she said to me, "I've seen absolute transformations in my children. They are much more interested in human stories, in what each other's stories, and they're much more able to tell their own stories. And it's to do with Lifter. And now I use Lifter in every single lesson I teach." So that was a massive shock for us. And we've had that echoed now in other special education schools. Swiss Cottage School in London, which is a really famous special education school, has told us some remarkable stories. And the great thing about special education schools is they actually really study their pupils, their students. They really try to measure their learning and the impact things have. And, you know, some of the stuff we've been told is just mind-boggling and really, really heartwarming for us. And Lifter was not designed for autistic children, and it wasn't designed, our VR application was not designed with dyslexic children in mind. So these are lovely surprises for us. And I think what I have to say about surprises, if something surprises you in a nice way, in a positive way, I mean, I can only recommend that you lean in. Sometimes you can't lean in as much as you'd like to. As a startup, time is scarce, and we have to do things that, that will secure our survival before we can sometimes do the exciting stuff that we'd like to do. But I think I always believe that it would be a real shame not to lean into something when it pleasantly surprises you. So.
That's incredible. I mean, I really appreciate your story and kind of your time, and especially, kind of in times like this, as you're watching your son, as you're working, as you're you know, living life and trying to figure out these next steps, not only in life in general, but also for the company. And so, Serdar, I really look forward to sharing this. And I really look forward to sharing, you know, with my friends, especially, you know, what I've learned about Lifta and the experience that I got to have in London. So thank you very much for your time.
Eric, thank you very much for your time. It was a pleasure to share this story and for your interest. And I look forward to connecting again in future and hopefully the start of a friendship.